You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Tuesday, 2nd of November. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Houghton, Johannesburg. On the show today, chatting with Nick Kuntz, we've got a day to catch up. It's global markets were green yesterday, but also we've got the Federal Open Monetary Committee meeting today and tomorrow. We're also chatting with Centova CEO. Profits double, stock back up at all-time highs. And then we're talking with George Herman from Citadel. Trends to watch for next year. The two biggies are going to be inflation and do rate increases sort of get pulled forward. The show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit StanLib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines from MoneyWeb. A look at the EOH's turnaround and how it's going. Need to sell some assets to de-gear. Column by Keith McLachlan. And then from Business Day, Implat says PGM fundamentals are intact despite volatility. That's from the CEO, Nick Muller. Don't disagree with him, but we are seeing some volatility. And a large part of that is vehicle supply chains. They can't get their chips. Morning markets. US was green. S&P up 0.2%. NASDAQ up 0.3%, both of those closing at new all-time highs. Asia is red, Sydney's up 0.6, Tokyo down 0.2. Commodities mixed, gold $1,792 an ounce, Brent $84.92 a barrel, palladium back above 2,000 at 2,046. We've got the rand 15.46, top 40 green open, not a heck of a lot. 10 cent is down 0.7%.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Joining now with Nick Kuntz, Senior Portfolio Manager at Sunlam. Nick, appreciate the early morning. I mentioned it in the intro there. We've got the Federal Reserve meeting today. Tomorrow, they will have their press conference tomorrow afternoon, U.S. time. We're not expecting any major changes, but we will be looking for news, I suppose, on tapering. Does it start in November, and will interest rates get pulled into 2023? But for now, it's all about tapering.
It's all about tapering. Morning, Simon. Yeah, and I think look no further than the news out of the Reserve Bank of Australia this morning, just shortly, less than an hour ago. They came out with dumping their policy of yield control curve. I think they are the first now large central bank to now act against, the surge in post-pandemic inflation and prices. And they are the first one to actually sort of dial it bit. So that is straight bang ahead of the Fed, as you said, tomorrow. And of course, the Bank of England also on Thursday. So it could be a very, very interesting week in how we set. Are we seeing finally the end of zero interest rate policies and certainly the start of a tightening cycle? And quite frankly, a lot of people new at their desks or 2-3 years out of university have never seen a world without central banks intervening. So very interesting times. I'm looking forward to this week.
Yeah, it is. And as you say, I mean, the new ones into the market, you have no idea what we're talking about. In essence, we're kind of anticipating it, but there could still be shocks. I mean, that has been well signaled by particularly the Fed, but central banks the world over. It is coming, and I suppose what we're just waiting almost in a sense is the terms and conditions.
Exactly. That's nicely put. We are waiting for those T's and C's because we all, as I said, the Jay Powell and the Fed have been uber transparent about this. They have been guarding it for months on end. I guess for me, the stickler is going to be in the small print, as you said, the T's and C's. Mm. You know, how quickly do they raise rates? Will we actually see them start to raise rates as early as the first quarter next year? I mean, the Bank of England, they talk about raising rates by the end of this year, and there's only 2 months left. So it could be very well that this is the start of it, and there is a concern amongst market watchers, myself included, that there might be, you know, are they erring on a bit of a policy error here? Is there a policy mistake? We are slap bang in the middle of earnings season. We've had about almost half the S&P 500 companies are reported. Almost every single earnings call talks about things like rampant inflation, accelerating inflation. So the ground floor and the factory gates are seeing it. We're not sure if the central banks want to see it because of obviously politics in the background.
Yeah, they were a bit certainly coming through there. We've also got ADP on Wednesday. My sense is that's going to almost be a non-event. I mean, we've kind of moved on from the jobs. I mean, there's some lumpiness, but employment in the US is largely back.
Yeah, it is. And follow that up, of course, with Friday, Simon, Jobs Friday as well. Mm-hmm. So non-farmers, that's going to be a busy one on that side. But you're right. I mean, non-farm and the jobless numbers used to be the sort of go-to figure for the month. I seem to be more like CPI and the PCE numbers, all the inflation numbers now taking center stage to jobless. But yes, you're right. The Fed's mandate, as we know, in line with the Fed, employment is part of their main mandate as opposed to other central banks. And I think they're almost, the jobless numbers are almost a side figure now. They're almost in full employment.
Yeah, so that's it. We'll keep an eye. Federal Open Monetary Policy Committee. Watch the Bank of England as well. Are they going to raise rates? As Nick says, time is running out. Nick Kuntz, Senior Portfolio Manager at Sanlam. Appreciate the early morning this morning. What is your take on it? We've got our poll on our LinkedIn and Twitter. You can have your vote. You can have your say. Is the market going to take it in the stride? Are we going to run into the end of the year?
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement, and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
Jenny and I with Glenn Heber, Santova CEO. Results out late last week for the 6 months ending August. Saw revenue, net interest income up 32.9%. Headline earnings up 120.6%. And net asset value coming up 18.6% at 465.8, which is a little ahead of where the share is trading right now. Glenn, appreciate the time this morning. A stellar set of numbers. The best in certainly the decade plus I've been watching Santova, I suspect. How much is it picking up new clients versus being able to pass on price increases because of logistic challenges and the surges we've seen in container prices and the like?
Now, thanks very much, Simon. Morning. I think, you know, when one looks at the year, the 6 months of the year, in fact, going back during COVID times, the shipping market has been disruptive, you can call it that. And obviously everyone's been in the squeeze and so far as pricing is concerned. But I think if one looks at our results, there's more to it than the marginal operating margin as a business and the pricing in the market. I just guess Santova's come of its own in the last year or so. Mm-hmm. You know, we've made significant use of technology. To give an indication, we were 330 staff and we're probably 20 times bigger now in earnings and we're 250 staff. So it gives you an indication of the direction we're heading. Yeah. So I guess the emphasis on technology. So it takes a lot out of the operating cost structure.
And that's always been Santova, an asset light, in fact, an asset zero. You don't have trucks. You don't have trains, planes, and ships and all the rest. You are very much a technology sort of helping a client get goods from A to B almost any way that they need it moved.
Yeah, your landed cost is also driven by, obviously, a lot of your workflow processes, mm-hmm. Manual tasks, and obviously staffing. Your cost structure is predominantly staffing. So if you can automate a significant part of the supply chain, is a significant reduction in costs that gets passed through to a client. But it's not just technology. I guess the group, from a leadership point of view, has matured over the mm-hmm. years, and certainly within the international fold, having a presence in China, in Asia has obviously assisted us in so far as the capacity constraints are concerned and pricing. And I guess it's enabled us to put in a lot of new clients. You know, if I look at the group, you know, the question one asked, can this be repeated next year? It's mm-hmm. a tough question. But as I said, we have been dealing in transacting in a very much an extraordinary market. But, you know, with the disruption of the industry as such, it has opened the door for us to compete because of the non-asset based and the technology and I guess the working capital we do have. Because when I talk about disruption of the industry, there's a significant amount more working capital that's required within the logistics sector. One doesn't realize the impact of that on a business. And if you haven't evolved into technology platforms, you're going to struggle from an operating margin point of view. So our operating margin is sitting about 30%, and the industry probably ranges between 7 and maybe 12. So it has obviously enabled us to generate the numbers you're looking at. But it's not just the pricing. I said the business itself seems to be in a good footing.
Yeah.
And it's enabled us to put on a lot of significant clients. Even the caliber of the staff, you know, the employment, the bar gets raised every year.
Mm-hmm.
So if I look at the staffing within the group worldwide as opposed to staffing going back 10 years, it's a very different profile individual, very much more of a consultative individual, which obviously engages with clients and drives at quantitative value add.
Yeah, and I remember the technology rollout, I think that was, 4 or 5 years ago, which is really coming into its own here. You mentioned China, you've got the Hong Kong hub, which has been really significant. Europe as well, I mean, Rotterdam benefiting from some increased sort of post-Brexit trade. I suppose when you get dealt some good cards, it's your ability to use them. I mean, you know, you had nothing to do with Brexit, but you're in Rotterdam and you're able to pick up some clients from that.
Well, look, we've been fortunate, and also Hong Kong has been developed out of SA and out of obviously Europe itself. You know, Hong Kong doesn't develop itself, and we've also had synergies between the various 23 offices in the 10 countries, which you don't typically get on setting up or on acquisition. You know, the synergies don't necessarily prevail, but we are seeing them come through now, where they're working collectively as one, and obviously. It's working out of Hong Kong, which we refer to our control tower. We reduce a lot of capacity on a lot of the lines at source. So it does give us an advantage, whereas I guess as a South African entity, you are confined to buying within the South African borders. But if you're a global business, you have those opportunities to source capacity, IP, globally, depending where the shift is or where the opportunity lies. So that flexibility obviously enables you, and that's also come through in the numbers for the 6 months.
A last question. Supply chains has been one of the stories of the pandemic. Is there any sight that you've seen that some sort of normalcy is returning, or is it remaining sort of gridlocked and complicated?
Yeah, look, I think the shipping industry has struggled over the last 12 years. And I guess the time has come where everything moves out of the bottom end of the cycle and we're now moving up. So I guess the rates might start easing next year, but they'll never get back to the rates. I don't believe the next few years to what we've seen in the last 10 years. I guess the cycle has changed. And the new pricing is now almost becoming a norm within the importers and exporters market. So, yeah, it'll soften, but I don't believe it'll soften significantly.
Okay.
My guess is it might be a 20-30%.
Okay, that is a telling statement. Kind of, this is going to be the new normal. We'll leave it there. Glenn Gerber-Santova, CEO, appreciate the time this morning.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Joining now with George Herman, Director and Chief Investment Officer at Citadel. George, appreciate the early morning. Looking forward to next year, 2022, as we sort of wrap up the 2021. One of the big themes is going to be around global inflation. I was chatting with my market commentator a moment ago. They've been seeing it in results out of the S&P 500 companies. We've got Federal Reserve Bank of England later this week, who obviously will comment on it. Is it likely that inflation and potentially rate increases are going to be one of the stories of next year?
Good morning, Simon. Indeed, the inflation debate heated up dramatically as the Fed initially just kind of swatted it away by saying, no, this is transitory. Mm. But suddenly, on the ground, the logistical nightmares around the globe, which you spoke about just now, along with several other factors, have now brought inflation front and center to the radar. And the new data does suggest that inflation will be more of a problem, go a little bit higher, and last a little bit longer. So, yes, it could indeed test the Fed's hand.
All those little higher, little longer, little everything. I mean, the transitory talk, which was Jerome Powell and his Federal Reserve, that really does seem to be out the window. And does this potentially, with maybe slowing global growth next year, pull U.S. rates into 2022 rather than the current proposed 2023?
The market has done exactly that, Simon. Fed Fund futures have drawn the expectation for the first rate hike well and truly into 2022, with 50 points already priced in for 2022 and another 75 points priced in for 2023. And whereas most other commentators, let's say 3 to 4 months ago, would have suggested the first hikes only in 2023. So undoubtedly, the Fed is going to be tested as to how they respond to this bout of inflation. The problem is that this bout of inflation comes at a time when we're at the end of literally a 30-year cycle of China exporting disinflation to the rest of the world, and that seems to have come to an end. And we could be at an inflection point here rather than just a short cyclical upswing in inflation.
I take your point on that. I mean, we've had, and I mean, certainly if I look at, I mean, U.S. Treasuries, again, a multi-decade trend that we've been seeing in the short and the longer term treasuries there. And one of the big issues is going to be China, and I'm thinking particularly around commodities. I mean, they've been, you know, exporting deflation, but they've been buying base metals and other commodities. Is that likely to continue? Because as South Africa, we need that for our growth, for our balance of trade, and frankly, for our rand.
Firstly, you touched on U.S. Treasuries. Mm. Well, bond vigilantes over the last 20 years have been killed, and Fed in the market perpetually buying. So you just don't get the natural flow of treasuries coming back to the market, and hence yields remain depressed. And with the search for yield all around the world, they just don't go higher. So that is one issue all on its own. Your second point around commodities is very true. The strong commodity prices, especially the industrial commodity complex, was really a tailwind to the rand through 20 and into the first half of 2021. And that is because literally those commodities are a proxy for what's happening to global growth, and the rand has become a proxy of emerging market and global growth per se. Those commodities have turned around sharply since the middle of October to now. They pulled back by 12% as per the BCOM Industrial Commodities Index. And you're talking about copper, aluminium, zinc, and nickel. So those are the two base metals that drive global growth, and they have turned lower. So a little bit more pressure on the currency. So at the same time, the currency since mid-October has pulled back by 8%, and it looks like there's a little bit more in store.
Yeah, and trading weaker this morning. Quick last question, bringing it back locally. One of the big issues locally that we do have some control over, because we don't control global commodity prices, of course, is our power supply, and that debate, renewable versus coal. It's going to be a hot topic. You know, we currently got COP26 happening in Scotland. This is going to go on for much of years, but it's going to be a big story for us locally in 2022.
It remains a hard story, Simon, because industry is looking for policy certainty and specifically energy certainty. And also South African sentiment, the consumer sentiment really needs energy. You saw that in the elections, much of the talk was all around electricity. So it's really required is policy certainty. Energy certainty would be a great boost for South African growth prospects.
We'll leave it there. George Herman, Director, Chief Investment Officer at Citadel. Great insights this morning. Appreciate the time. That's it for today. The poll we were asking you wasn't yesterday, it was Friday. EOH, back to operating profits. Still a headline loss, but they should fix that within the next year. Still a lot of debt. The question, are you buying? Almost half of you are saying, nope, been burnt before. I say, markets have memories. You've been burnt, you're not going to rush back into that fire in a hurry. About a quarter of you are saying, yep, absolutely. And a third of you are saying, yep, you are holding. So a lot more bullishness on EOH, just under half of you saying thanks, but no thanks. Remember, have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. The show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit StanLib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning on the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nicole, Nebuchle, for you for listening, my guests for their early morning contributions. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.